Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, race fans, and welcome back to Blog Talk Radio, talking motorcycles, flat track racing tonight here live from the 36 Degrees North studio in beautiful downtown Tulsa, Oklahoma, in the Brady Arts District. And we're going to be joined by Mr. Herb Hoodoo Howard, along with Gary Ketchum, both of Oklahoma, here directly. And we're waiting for them to call in. We'll look and see what we've got here on the caller line. If I can move this out of the way. Gotta love computers. And we're waiting for Mr. Hoodoo Howard to call in. We just called him and didn't get an answer there. So as soon as he gets on the line, we'll be hearing from Herb Hoodoo Howard. Now Hoodoo dates back, he's 82 years old, so he was riding the Matchless motorcycles, and he worked for the Indian Motorcycle Company through Matchless. Curly Sutton was the sponsor of the bikes that Hoodoo rode, and they were 600cc. Class C is how they were designated then. And he has a long list of things that he'd like to talk to you about, and then we'll be joined later by another rider who has come back onto the national circuit here in the last couple of years, who was a fireball on the racetrack here in Oklahoma in the 70s and 80s. That's Mr. Gary Ketchum. He carries the number 10G number plate on his Kawasaki. We'll be listening to some flat track music here, the official song of flat track. Here you go. Well, that was the official song of the flat track motorcycle racing here in the United States of America and all across the world, I guess, now with the Super Prestigio and all the big races in Spain and Europe. And we tonight are going to have Mr. Herb Howard on the line with us. Like he's calling in right now, and we'll grab Herb Howard, who's calling in from up in the northern part of the state. Hoodoo, how you doing tonight, sir?
Hey, Bob, I'm keeping warm.
I'm real warm. What was it, almost 100?
Yeah, I think so. Yep, everything's going great, though.
Cool. Well, I was introducing you to the race fans and telling them about the Matchless and the Indian Motorcycle Company and all that cool stuff that you had going on in your career. But let's take you back to when you first started riding motorcycles and how that came about and who got you into it. And then you can kind of take us through, you know, a little bit of your life's history.
Well, it's been wild and crazy. When I first got out of high school, graduated from Spalpa, I had a younger brother that bought him a motorcycle. And I came home from work one day, and I stopped and out where he was out playing on his motorcycle, and I stopped and got on it and rode it, and I said, man, this is lots of fun. I got to have one of these. So it wasn't long until I bought me a 1943 Harley Davidson and started riding on the street, rode it for a couple of years, traded it in on a brand new Ariel 650 street bike is made in England. I had it for a year or two and kind of banged it up. And so I traded for another one just like it. And then I finally attempted riding in the dirt a little bit. Man, so I had to get to buying dirt bikes too. I had road bikes and dirt bikes. And then a friend of mine named Chuck Hodgins, he came home from the Army, and he was an old flat track racer. And I'm talking to him, and I make a mistake, go with him to a race or two. The first thing I know, I had to get me a race bike. And I traded a Harley with a sidecar that I had to Victor McAnally, who was his daddy, had a KR, a Harley KR. And actually Victor's granddad wanted a sidecar rig. And so I traded him that sidecar rig for this flat tracker that Johnny had been riding. And man, that was the beginning of a whole new life when I started going to half mile races and racing all over the country. Had a lot of fun.
What year was that?
That was about 59, about 1959. That was a 57 model motorcycle, I remember. So, it was 59 when I started flat tracking, and I was also riding lots of Oklahoma, what they call scrambles races. We did not have motocross in that in them days. We had scrambles races, which is off-road, very tracks were not really graded. Some of them could be, but most of them were mostly just a glorified cow trail and, you know, a closed course. And we raced on that kind of racing with Royal Enfields and Matchlesses and Jawas, NSUs, anything I could get my hands on that I was racing it. And then, but a guy named Curly Sutton, a local dealer, saw me racing one day. I guess it was 1960, yeah, out at Dutch's track on South Memorial. And he was an old ex-racer himself, and he sponsored a lot of guys racing. And so anyway, he come up to me after I came in off the track, and he said, "If you're going to ride like that, I want you to ride for me." And being it was getting expensive maintaining my own motorcycles, that sounded good to me. I said, "What do you got for me to ride?" And he said, "I'll build you a brand new flat tracker." And I said, "And give you half of the money. You keep half the money, and we'll go racing for money." And I said, "Get to building." And I sold my Harley, and I don't even know who I sold it to. Have no idea. But I knew I sold that dude and started riding his. He fixed me up a brand new Royal Enfield. We raced it for 2 or 3 years. Won a few races, blowed up a lot of good engines, and then he got a chance to. There was 20 matchless G50s brought into the United States. They from England, and that's how many they had to bring in to get them legal for AMA racing, and we managed to get one of them for me to ride, and that was a fine race bike. Really had a lot of fun with that thing. It always had the feeling sitting on the starting line, I look at the competition, and I always had the feeling that, well, they can't outrun this motorcycle. Now it's up to me. And man, that thing would hook up and go. So had a lot of fun. Then about I started raising a family, and it was time to hang up the old steel shoe and get down to business, working and providing for my family. So anyway, it was a lot of fun.
It sounds like it. You know, for our younger listeners here, those brands and those models, they may have heard of a lot of them, like Indian and Royal Enfield Matchless, but they may not be familiar what size of engine was, and those were what they were, single cylinders, the size of them. Tell us a little bit about that, and what made the G50 different than like the BSA Gold Star or the other NSU bikes and the other stuff you were racing.
Yeah. Well, of course, Harley Davidson still was in the racing game always. But all of these other brands that I got to ride in were English bikes made in England. And most of them, of course, the Harleys was V-twins, two-cylinder, V-type engines, flathead, 45s. But what the ones I was riding were all single cylinder, 500cc, and then of course the Triumphs were a two cylinder, 500cc that had to compete against the bigger Harleys. They handicapped us because we had overhead valves, and the Harleys were flatheads. And so then the Matchless, when it came along, it was a 500 overhead valve, but it has overhead cams also. And Matchless made one, and AJS had one in same bike, only it was sold under AJS name in Europe. They just had it all together. They them babies didn't do a lot of spinning and sliding. They got a hold of the racetrack and went forward. And I just, I loved riding them matchless.
But wow.
I did ride, one time I rode Gary Nixon's Triumph. He was going to a national in Shreveport, and there, that's back when I was still riding a Harley. He said, my Harley is fast. Your Harley's faster than my Triumph. How about letting me take it to Shreveport to that national? And we was having a small money race here in Tulsa that I was going to ride. And he said, you ride my Triumph at Tulsa. So I rode his Triumph. One race is a lot different, but and then I rode a different Triumph up in Kansas one time. It was a guy out of Oklahoma City took me up there to Cottonwood Falls, Kansas. We'd been racing in Winfield and Dodge City and stuff, but Cottonwood Falls had every year what they called a half star flat track, which was the minimum amount of money that they had to put up. And I took this guy's Triumph. We went up there, and I think I finished second in a consolation race, which wasn't nothing to brag about, but the pay for that was $2. And so I kept a dollar and I gave him a dollar. And there was no money in racing in them days, but it was a lot of fun.
Somebody was talking about Harley Davidson and their advantage all the time between the weight, the size of the engine, the restrictor, this, that, the other. And sounds like they kind of had that back in the 60s as well. I mean, with the flathead.
Oh yeah, they did. You betcha they did. It was the AMA, the American Motorcycle Association, who sanctioned all these races all over the United States. They were controlled by Harley Davidson. There was no question about it. And so the rules were kind of one-sided. We had to run the little bikes against their big, bigger motorcycles. But it made it fun when you beat them, and we beat them a lot. So, I had a lot of respect for them. The one that I had owned was a fast motorcycle, but it just was expensive keeping it running. And I was just a working boy, and so that's why I sold it. But I was offered the Harley Davidson people came to Tulsa about the same time I got that matchless. they approached me to ride for them. They had a factory rider in the area, but they wanted to put a second factory sponsored rider and want to know if I would be interested in it. And I already knew this matchless was in the mill, so I wasn't very smart probably, but I told him, no, I'm having too much fun beating them. And so that's the end of that little proposition. But it was nice to be offered a factory ride at one point anyway. But I quit that racing, and then after several years, I decided to put in a motorcycle shop. I worked for the highway department 8 years, and then I quit them, and Kawasaki had offered me a factory representative job to work for them. And man, I really wanted that job. I really wanted it. And I came home, got off the airplane, and my wife met me with our first child, who was just 6 months old. And I'd been gone 3 days, and she looked at me like a stranger, you know. And it really shocked me, because they had hired me to go do this job and told me, see, I'd need to be on the road about 3 weeks at a time setting up dealers around over the United States. And when I decided, if I can't be gone 3 days here without my daughter not even knowing me, I can't leave. I'm not going to leave. And so I called them back and told them I had to turn the job down. I had an obligation I couldn't turn my back on, and they thanked me. And sure enough, the guy that had helped me get that job, my old buddy Joe Wilson, he was a factory rep for him, and he called at my house to see where I was at, and I answered the phone, and boy, what are you doing home? I said, well, I quit that job. And boy, I'm coming out there and kick your bottom. And I said, well, come on. So he came out, and I told him the story, and he said, well, I got to respect you for turning it down. But he said, why don't you, we had a couple of beers, and he says, how about you putting in a Kawasaki shop right here in Tulsa? And I said, man, I ain't got no money. He said, oh, they've taught me how to help you guys borrow money to get started, how to get started. So we went to, he said, make up a list of everything you own and how much you owe on it, and da, 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 da. And so we did, and we took that, and we went to the five bankers trying to borrow $5,000 to start my business with. And the first four turned me down because I didn't have nothing to put up for collateral speak of. And the fifth one, it was a motorcycle riding friend of mine, street riding friend, that was the loan officer. And he said, well, they turned you down. My board of directors turned you down too. But he said, I can loan you $4,500 on my signature and not even run it through the board of directors. And so that's what we done. He loaned me $4,500, and we started Action Cycles. And I said, a lot of people say it take 2 years to start making money. I said, we got to make money the first month, or we can't pay the rent the second month. And but we really got off to a good start and was in business for a lot of years and sold lots and lots of Kawasaki's.
But yeah, I believe it was about 2000 there in the early 80s. Before Harley Davidson decided to sue everybody with that dumping thing against the Japanese manufacturers, that kind of slowed things down a little bit.
Yeah, there's been some bumps along the way, but I'm still riding the Kawasaki street bike. I'm 81 years old, but I've still got my Kawasaki road bike, and I've been riding for 63 years now, and if it's arthritis, don't get worse, I'm gonna keep riding. But
Hoodoo, they're trying to make a museum out of the Outsiders house, the movie The Outsiders, which was written by the same lady from Tulsa that wrote Rumblefish.
Yes, and I know her.
Susie B. Hinton, as I recall, Action Cycles is listed on the credits at the end of the movie Rumblefish, and all the motorcycles that were used in that film came from your dealership, Action Cycles. Tell us a little bit about that, Francis Ford Coppola and all those people.
They decided to come. Well, this writer wrote some books, and they were bestsellers, so they decided to make movies of them. They come to Tulsa, and Francis Ford Coppola, who was a big time producer in them days, was here to make them. And so I furnished motorcycles in the one called Tex, the movie called Tex. I furnished those. Those were my motorcycles. And we was on the site when they was shooting all that stuff, and got acquainted with a bunch of them. So then when they came back to do the Outsiders, it was about a guy called Motorcycle Boy. And so I furnished him all the motorcycles for that movie. And one night, well, in fact, Matt Dillon was a guy in the first movie, and then him and God, slipped my mind. The guy that was a star in this second movie. Well, anyway, he bought a couple motorcycles and took them home back to California with him. He bought a couple from me, but I had furnished him all the movies. And one night they were shooting down close to Keynes, downtown. And I had already gone home, lived out on Keystone Lake, and was on a Friday, on a Saturday night. And they was down there after dark shooting. And the guy, Francis Ford Coppola, says, "We need more motorcycles sitting here, just sitting here in front of this bar." And so they shut everything down. Everybody went to eat. They called me, said, "We got to get some more motorcycles." And I said, "Man, I'm home barbecuing right now. I'm cooking and for my kids and stuff." And I told them no two or three times, and they just kept saying, "Hoodoo, we're going to pay you. We'll pay you whatever you've asked. But we've got to have," Francis Ford Coppola says, "we got to have about six more motorcycles sitting here right now." So I called, and in fact, he says, "We'll even help you get them here." So he sent a bunch of guys from the set, workers, to my motorcycle shop, and I came in from Keystone Lake, where I lived, came in, and we got a whole bunch of our used bikes and rode them down there and set them in front of this bar, and they went back shooting film, and used them. They didn't ride them or nothing. They just had to be all sitting there in front of this bar for this scene. And it was quite a deal. They had them for a couple hours, and then they helped me ride them all back to the shop and put them up.
That's a good Action Cycles Kawasaki story right there. I like that. That's Tulsa.
Yeah.
That's a big connection there. And, you know, you guys are still on the credits. I mean, when the credits roll, it says Action Cycles Tulsa. That's just cool.
Yeah.
And speaking
I've
of
never
Tulsa,
seen that.
Yeah, it's there. Well, nowadays they don't show the credits.
I know it is. Yeah, it was supposed to be in the credits. I know that, but I never have
I've seen it.
But
I've stopped it and looked right. Yeah, I was wanting to take a picture of it.
Well, great.
I need a picture of it. You know, we've got another writer from Tulsa, Oklahoma, that you know and I know. And we saw this kid come up from mini bikes up to where he is now. And I believe it's Gary Ketchum on the line. See if we can get him to come in with us here.
Yeah. I knew his mom and daddy before they was married. Are you there,
Gary,
Bob?
Are you? Yeah, we are here, me and Hoodoo.
All right.
How you doing?
Hoodoo, yeah. How you doing, Hoodoo? Hey, I'm doing great.
Yeah,
great. Good
great.
To hear your voice.
Yours too, Hoodoo.
Yep. Are you all set and ready for the big race coming up?
Yeah, we are. We're really looking forward to it. We're really pumped about AMA bringing a national back to Oklahoma with the help of Brass Monkey Promotions. Sean Brassfield owns that company, and he's really put a lot of time and effort and a lot of resources in it, to attract AMA back here. And, of course, you know, a mile, the people out there that have never seen 750s run on a mile, they're in for a big treat. It's going to be a spectacular race, a spectacular day. All the top AMA pro flat track riders around the country are going to be there. It's just real special. I know Ronnie Jones has done a lot of work promoting it. I've went around and done what I can do in this part of the country to push it, and the ticket sales really look promising. And you know, we're just encouraging everybody to get out and come and watch us ride.
Yeah, I know that mile is the ultimate. That to me is the ultimate motorcycle race. It's got the speed of road racing and the closeness of dirt tracking, and boy, it's the real deal. Tickle to death.
It's a real deal. It's a real deal. I mean, you know, you've done this. You tuck down and get as small as you can on the straightaways, and we'll probably be running right at, I'm guessing, about 140 down the straights, and then you know, you set up somewhat going into the turns, and you know, just kind of roll off of throttle a little bit, and then you're back on it, and trying to make a straightaway out of that turn as fast as you can again. And drafting is a big strategy on the miles. You know, people are going to see the 750s running, you know, within inches of each other, handlebar to handlebar, wheel to wheel, and it's just going to be really exciting.
Yeah, I can't hardly wait. I've got a whole big group of people that got tickets for them from Tulsa. People from Tulsa that's going over. Going to be a lot of us over watching you guys.
Yeah, there is, and you know, I know a lot of the old racers that around the area that I grew up riding with, and I learned a lot from, are going to be there. You know, watching. It's really going to be a great day for sure. It is, and you know, the flat track community, just such a great group of people. I can remember, you know, how I got started in it was by an old flat tracker that used to race out at John Zink's back in the day. It was back when the novice plates for Oklahoma were the AMA novice plates were green background, white numbers, and then Oklahoma's district letter was M.
Yeah.
The guy's name was Jan Wiley, and saw me riding a little Honda. He'd saw me riding a little Honda Mini Trail 50 around, and out by the house, and he hollered out the window of his car and said, "You gonna be there a while?" And I said, "Sure." So he came back down with a Honda Mini Trail 50 that was wasn't stock at all, and he started going left with me and running into me, you know, cutting me off and putting tire marks all over me, and kind of got me acclimated to flat track racing at a young age. And you know, there's been a lot of people through the years that have helped me and been so instrumental to flat track racing in Oklahoma. You know, you particularly. The McDonald's over at Canaan Racing, you know, the Janibers, Corky Story, MISI, Smokey's Honda, Smokey Suzuki. There's been so many dealers, you know, in the past that have got behind flat track racing. And you know, I really believe that flat track is making a resurgence now. We've saw some really promising spectator crowds at some of the races I've been to this year, and I think it's on the upswing. And you know, like I said, the been some great riders come out of Oklahoma, you know, particular some of them that aren't with us anymore. Andy Evans, Randy Cleek, Ted Booty, Ed Daly, Terry Smith, Brett Brady. You know, there's just been Freddie Nix, you know, going back. There's been Gary Nixon, so many really great riders that have came out of the state. And then, you know, kind of the group that I grew up riding with, the Cartwrights, Timmy, Danny, and Tommy, Henry Bollinger, Terry Smith, David Bradley, you know, the McDonald's, Johnny Isaacs, which is the guy that is helping me out now to make that motor where I can compete at a national level. You know, there's just been so many guys I used to run with go around Texas and try to find him and race him. And, you know, everybody knows Bubba Schobert. He was kind of in that era that I grew up racing with. Charlie Smith, a great rider from this area. And the Jones brothers, Ronnie, and everybody knows, you know, his younger brother David's no longer with us, great rider. Scott Adams, a great flat track rider, you know, for our area. And there's just, you know, just you start looking back on it, the Bagwells, Jimmy and Terry Bagwell. You start looking back on those guys, and just the Burleys, the number of Oklahoma flat track riders that have, you know, came out, and some of them are still doing it today, and some of them are just, you know, kind of watching, or some of them are kind of behind the scenes helping guys, you know, the Eslicks. They're kind of the younger generation, Danny and AJ Eslick, the McAnally's. And I think Danny actually, I think Danny may ride the National in Oklahoma City. He's just, you know, he's had an outstanding road racing career and just a really good all-around rider. I think he's going to be that guy. So, you know, we're really looking forward to it. It's really going to be a shot in the arm to flat track racing. And, you know, the success of the day is going to determine, you know, that we're going to have this back here again next year, and we all think we are.
Yeah, Gary, your story about you is amazing. How you started so young and raced for a good number of years, and then you've quit and raised your family and worked your way up in a job situation where you have a very big job, and now you've started back to racing the last 3 years, which is you're actually you're too old to be doing this, Gary, but you're doing it. But you're doing it, and it tickles me to death to see you doing it.
Yeah. I you know, I've got a lot of good people that have, you know, helped me through the years. That, you know, you have helped me out and just been a, you know, a great example to racing and the involvement of racing, the McDonald's. Of course, my parents, you know, just gave up so much through the years to make sure that, you know, I could get to the races that I needed to get to. My sister, my young sister, being drug around all those years to the races. And then, you know, just being very fortunate to have the support of the sponsors that I had through the years. You know, anytime I got a sponsor, I always made a commitment to them that, you know, I was going to give them everything I had. And, you know, the folks that have helped me, they've done the same with me, and it's worked out really well. I've been, you know, really blessed in that aspect. And, you know, like you say, I quit for a lot of years, raised my family, and I've got a full time job. This year, I'm trying to make every mile national on the circuit. That's my goal this year. I quit for a lot of years, and then ran into you know, Johnny Isaac. He built the motors for Team K&N back when I was riding for them. I ran into Johnny about 5 years ago, and so I kind of blame him a little bit. I joke with him, but ran into him, and he said, "Hey, man," he said, "you look about like you did the day you quit. Have you thought about riding again?" And I said, I looked at him, and I said, "Well, I have now." So he said, "Well, I've got a ride for you." And he took me around to some non-sanctioned events, and we had some success. And my buddy Ronnie Jones, which I call Ronnie the king of consistency, Ronnie is should be inducted into the AMA Hall of Fame one day. I think he's the only AMA pro rider that has made a national main event in 5 different decades. Quite an accomplishment. But anyway, Ronnie got a hold of me, and he said, "What do you think about, you know, getting your pro license reinstated?" And I said, "Well, I think I may be interested." So I had to go through the, you know, the steps to get that done. Ronnie helped me, and I've been riding for I've had my pro license now for 4 years, I believe. And I think I got a few more years left in me. At my age, there's no doubt about it. I got to train harder and, work harder than most of the guys I ride with. I've got a pretty strenuous workout regimen that I do. I've got, my folks help me. Johnny Isaac's Total Performance Racing, Shaggy's Power Sports, the McDonald's at Canyon Racing, Speed Sport Leatherworks, JW Oilfield Pipe and Supply, I've got some good people helping me right now that, I couldn't do it without their help, actually. And, Hoodoo, when you're racing and trying to compete on a national level, it takes a lot of resources and, it takes a team. You just can't do it on your own. And I'm really fortunate to have people helping me.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about that motorcycle that you're riding.
Well, I'm riding it's the Kawasaki. It starts out the EX650 Ninja, and those old motors, anybody that knows, that little motor's real durable. It's fast from the factory. However, to compete at the national level, it just doesn't have the horsepower that it needs. So that's what we start out with, the EX650. We've got this one. It's in a J&M frame. It's taken us a couple of years to get there. But over the last winter, we were able to get it bumped up to a 750, which I was really excited about. Got the good crank in it, and it's putting out some horsepower. Johnny Isaac's done an excellent job building the motor. It really runs. The Kawasaki handles great. That was one of the things I was a little bit reluctant. The first year I rode Springfield, I got my license on a 750. I rode an older XR, which, the XRs handle great. And, going to the Kawasaki, I knew the Kawasaki would have the horsepower to compete with the Harleys and anything else on the racetrack. But the handling ability concerned me a little bit. But the way that 650 set up, the way it sits in that J&M frame, it's got the Weiss Racing front end on it. It handles sweet. I mean, I can drive it off in the turn hard, get back on the gas hard, and it just it goes. It's a sweet ride. And the Kawasaki's are they're coming on strong on the AMA Pro Circuit. For a long time it was just Harley dominating it. Harley's still, they're still super competitive and hard to beat, but there's other brand names getting involved. Kawasaki's got a great showing at the national level. They got Yamaha starting to get back into it. There's some Ducatis out on the circuit. Triumph's coming back in. There's actually Indians getting back in at the national level. They had an Indian at Springfield Mile. So, getting the different brands back involved, I think it's real healthy and great for the sport. And, I'm real happy with this Cowie we're riding. And like I said, Johnny's done a great job with this motor.
That's great. That's great. You mentioned Indian way back in Indians used to dominate motorcycle racing back in the early 1900s, and then they went, they was team building Indians there for a whole lot of years, and then there's been two or three different people get them and try to get the Indian company going again, but failed, and now this outfit that's got them now has their big bucks people, and they're building a wonderful road bike. I know that. They're building a wonderful road bike, and they're here to stay again. Indian is.
I believe you're right. I know their Indian is really supporting this national we got in Oklahoma. The Indian motorcycle dealers in the state are really putting some resources into this national. The Indian at the Springfield Mile, I was actually in line to get when they let the riders into the pits. We were kind of sitting there, and the guy told me, said, come here, I need to show you something. And he took me back there, and he was actually the guy that built the Indian, and he had it there in his trailer, and I got to look at it. And it's trick, and it's sweet looking, and I think, like you say, they're this go round. They've got the resources. I think they're here to stay for sure.
Yep, that's great. I'm glad to see these other brands getting back in the flat tracking. That's a healthy situation. When one company dominates, it kind of kills the sport eventually. But now that all these other brands are back into it, it's gonna get better.
It is, getting these other brands back into it, Kawasaki, Yamaha, Ducati, Triumph, Indian. What
yep.
it's done, it's for it's actually, you know, it's forced Harley Davidson to pick their game up. They're developing a liquid cool flat tracker, and you know they've got a young guy, Davis Fisher, riding that thing, and he actually made the national at Springfield. And you know as well as I do, you got to have horsepower at Springfield. You know, they've it's forced them to, you know, to hey, you know, we can't just be lethargic here. We got to stay on top of our game to compete, because here comes Kawasaki and these other brands too. And like you say, it's healthy for the sport.
Yeah. Hey, what do you know about this track situation over at Oklahoma City?
I think the racetrack is going to be you mean as far as the preparation and
Yes.
I know Sean Brassfield, the promoter that's working with AMA, Brass Monkey Promotions, they started track preparations, I believe it was last Thursday. And what they'll do, of course, you know, everybody knows that it's a horse racetrack. It's a big mile. The racetrack is super wide, which that makes it good for racing, because it's a safe racetrack when they're wide. And what they'll do, and what they've been doing and have done, is they go in there and they scrape that cushion off the top of it and get down to the hard base. And then they start working that hard base and watering it. And, you know, our hope is that we can get some rubber down on it, you know, through the free practice and then the time trials. Get a good wide move on it, and then, you know, I think the guys that work the track there are have enough knowledge with that dirt there at that racetrack to know that, you know, the amount of water that they need to keep on it throughout the day to make the racetrack stay together. So, no, we're really excited about it. I think it's going to be a fast racetrack. It's a little bit, you know, Springfield configuration of the Springfield racetrack is pretty symmetrical. You know, the straights are a quarter mile long, the turns are each a quarter of a mile, but this racetrack, it's a little bit more, if you saw it from an aerial view, it's a little bit more the shape of like a paperclip. We're going to really be flying down the straightaways, and you know, we're going to really be scrubbing some speed off going into the turns, but it's going to make for some great racing.
Yeah, I can't hardly wait.
No, I can't either. There's a lot of folks that can't hardly wait. It's we're all looking forward to it. It's going to be a great day. I know. You know, I worked working with Sean, the promoter, and then him and AMA got us a booth out at the Chili Bowl, and I took the Kawasaki out there, and we had the XR that I'd rode 4 years ago, James Waters XR. We had it in the booth, and the amount of interest of people just coming into the booth, because you can't walk into a motorcycle shop and see a flat tracker. And a flat tracker is just unique. It's sweet. It's fast. There's just something about it. And the amount of people that came into that.
It's like a thoroughbred.
It is. You're right, Hoodoo. And the amount of people that came in that booth and, you know, got to asking about the race and, you know, how they run, how they set up. And, it's just a neat deal. And I think the National coming back to Oklahoma is going to be great for racing and for motorcycles in general.
Hey, let me throw one thing in. Now, this old hot weather, of course, that's good for motorcycle racing. Spectators are over there. The spectators, it's all covered, and it's even air-conditioned. The tickets that all of my group have, they're sitting in air conditioned under in the shade watching these going to be watching these races. That's great.
And that's going to be amazing. And you know, like you say, the venue is just an awesome place to have an event like this, especially a national. And a lot of the seats are behind glass. They're in an air conditioned area. The others that aren't, they're in a shaded area. And there's this facility's got enormous big screens all around that facility. That if you're in one area of it, you can just look up at the big screen and watch the race or the time trials going on, even though you may not be looking at the racetrack. So,
yeah,
and there's going to be some, you know, some activities for the kids to do. It's just going to be a really eventful day, and you know, it for Oklahoma racing and everybody involved. It's you know, it's going to be a great day.
Yeah. Now, of course, there will be some activity going on during the afternoon, but the actual races themselves start at 6:30. Isn't that correct?
Yes, they start later. I think the main events will start sometime after 8. So, you know, by the time the heats are running and the mains hit, the temperature should be, you know, cooling down. You know. And, you know, along with that, there's going to be a little bit of changing on the track conditions. So, you know, that kind of
that kind of
throws a, you know, a little bit of challenge to the riders and to the pit crews to make the adjustments for the motorcycles, for the heats and the main events. Because now, you know, it's the temperature's cooler. The racetrack doesn't have the sun bearing down on it. So, you know, you're going to hook up a little
it
different.
It gets better.
And, you know, hopefully a little better. It gets better. You're exactly right. It should get faster as the day goes on.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be faster and faster as the day goes. As the evening cools down.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, let's tell the listeners, and they may not be in Oklahoma. They may be wherever around the world. This race is going to be held in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. At Remington Park, that is a horse race track. It is a mile. It is this Saturday, June 18th. It's 2 days, 4 hours, 4 minutes, and 4 seconds away. Gates open at 1 o'clock, time practice at 3 p.m., open paddock at 5:15, so you get to walk through and visit with the riders, look at the equipment up close, and have a good time inside the paddock area, and then take a seat because opening ceremonies kick off at 6:30 p.m. See you there. That's what it says. All right. Well, that sounds like a good program. And we've got about 4 minutes left in this show, so you guys close it out for me. You've done it. You've been wonderful guests. I mean, I couldn't have asked for better. Thank you, Gary.
Thank you guys. I thank you guys for the opportunity and you know, to visit with Hoodoo again. I always it's always a pleasure to see Hoodoo and you know having me on here, Bob. I just feel really fortunate to be able to do this. And like I said, I got a few years left in me. I feel like it's just an exciting time, and I'm glad that you gave us this opportunity to kind of get the word out and, you know, generate some more interest. And like I've said, and I know Hoodoo said it, if you haven't ever seen a mile race with these 750s running down a straightaway at 140 miles an hour, then you probably really hadn't seen racing.
Yeah, that'll probably be, what'll it be, 25 laps, the main event?
Yeah.
Will that be, what it'll be, 25 laps?
The GNC 2 will be probably 12 or 15, and then the GNC 1 will be 25.
Yep, that's a long ways to race.
That's a long way
in
to
the
race.
Dirt.
Yeah,
that'll be great.
Everything's running flat out. The riders pushing as hard as they can push physically, and they're getting everything out of those motors. It's a lot of strain and stress, and a lot of competition on everybody. And I think that's what makes the sport so great.
Yep.
Well, if you're unable to get there,
and you just can't get there. You can actually watch it live streaming at fanschoice.tv. But if you're within driving distance or a small airplane flying distance, I suggest you go. Because television and being there live in the shed. Out, yeah.
All right. Be there. Hi, everybody. Be there. It'll be fun. See ya.
Thank you, guys.
Okay. Yeah, thank you.
Best
all right,
of luck
guys.
To you, Gary.
All right.
Yes,
you're
welcome.
I'll probably see all of you at the races. Take care. Hey, you guys, did you hear that Robert Winters passed away yesterday?
No, I did not hear that.
That's a shame.
Yeah, my old buddy from Fort Smith.
Super racer.
Yeah. Died yesterday.
Sorry to hear that.
Yep. Okay. Well, I'll see you later.
All righty.
Bye.
Well, this has been Bob Ertley with Talking Motorcycle Flat Track. And we've been here at the 36 Degree North studio in progressive downtown Tulsa in the Brady Arts District. Thanks for tuning in and enjoy your weekend.